LLC, a local bicycle food delivery company delivering to the Portland metro area in an hour or less. More information and a list of local eateries they work with can be found at pdxccc.com.
You're listening to X-Ray FM, KXRY Portland at 91.1 on your FM dial. K296FT West Haven serving Portland at 107.1 on your FM dial. And K219KU Nahalem serving the Oregon coast at 91.7 on your FM dial. Streaming live and archive, baby, at xray.fm. Radio is yours.
From the University of Oregon's Agora Journalism Center, this is the Listener's Podcast. Welcome back to Oregon Speaks, Voices from This Moment, a special season of the Listener's Podcast produced by the graduate students at the University of Oregon. I'm Andrew Devigal, the director of the Agora Journalism Center and a professor at U of O's School of Journalism and Communication. In this season, we're exploring how Oregonians are navigating this moment of transition through stories of uncertainty, mutual aid, resilience, and care. Let's listen in.
Hello, my name is Dakota Rainey Trapp. I'm your host for this episode, and I'm with my producer, Daniel Bloomfield.
Hello.
Right now, we are facing a crisis in the nation where Public Broadcast Services, or PBS for short, is at risk of losing funding due to the federal budget cuts from the Trump administration. The risk to their funding would impact their programming, which is essential for both news and early childhood education. So to get an idea of how PBS is dealing with this, I brought in a guest, Floyd Aragon of Southern Oregon PBS. Now, Floyd, would you introduce yourself to the audience and tell us a bit about Southern Oregon PBS?
My name is Floyd Aragon. I live in Medford, Oregon. I am currently a producer at Southern Oregon PBS. My job particularly entails producing a show called Cinema 42, which highlights the people and places and independent filmmakers from Southern Oregon and Northern California. Southern Oregon PBS was founded in 1979, I believe. It was a idea of a local businessman, and he and other business leaders in the area decided to try to get public television to Southern Oregon. Well, what do we mean to the community? What is our worth? What is our value to this community? What does it mean to us? And that's something I think we need to reestablish. And I think for some communities, we have to establish that. Funny thing, FEMA was actually supposed to give us a grant, and that's held up, to improve our infrastructure because, you know, the Cascadia quake, we kind of need these over the air. If the internet goes down or streaming goes down, you know, a lot of people, their only way to find communication is OTA, over the air, and to maintain these repeaters across this large area, you know, that's also one of our kind of our contingencies that we have, that, you know, we need to be part of this over the air network because of emergency preparedness. I mean, that's part of what television does for people too, informs a community.
But real quick, that FEMA grant is being maintained?
That's still up in the air. I think they gave away the first round earlier this year and we didn't get it, but we applied for the second round and a lot's happened within the last 2 weeks. So we don't know what funding is being cut, what funding is going through. Obviously he's backtracked on a couple of items of federal funding for different federal agencies. So we will see, I guess.
How was, like, the DOGE federal budget cuts affecting Southern Oregon PBS, or was there any impact there from the DOGE's cut?
Nothing immediate, because a lot of our CPB funding occurs every 2 years. So we've already got some CPB funding already. We get it in a third of a grant per year. CPB had very specific rules on how the grant money can be made available to us. And it was by, you know, doing these underwritings where I think we might have mentioned it before. There's a list of things that underwriters for public broadcasting can't say, you know, like it's a Sunday doing that and showing prices because it was attached to that funding. Now that funding may be going away. So there, does that mean we can go ahead and now, I don't know, not really fund ourselves via, you know, a commercial station way. We can get underwriters. We can have people coming in and saying, or run commercials. Don't even call them underwriters anymore. So that's something that we're going to kind of look at.
So those are your biggest donors, and it seems like their donations are conditional. Are the federal funds historically conditional as well?
Yes. In order to be a nonprofit, there are certain things. But now, since it's a media, there are other FCC rules, which might be something you might want to look into too, ruling nonprofit television and low power. Well, we have a couple low power stations, but they're mostly religious, I think, here, at least in Southern Oregon. I don't know what their rules are for that, but yes, there are stipulations of how we can fundraise. But since we're not getting any more federal funding, then what does that mean? I mean, our license is a non-commercial license. But in the meantime, like I said, we're going to have conversations of what we do in case this doesn't happen. We've got to get on top of this and have strategy so people are thinking differently. You know, projects that we might have had in the back burner and thought about, you know, they probably won't happen now.
But it's the atmosphere in, like, right now within the studio.
Apprehension. No one knows what's going to happen, you know. At least giving some awareness. I mean, if anything, this attention has gotten people to think about PBS and what it means to them, you know. So, and like I said, there are strategies to combine, you know, JPR and SOPBS. And if that does happen, you know, it might be 4 or 5 years down the road, we might actually be on the SOU campus, which means, you know, some of us will lose our jobs, because there's going to be overlap on staffing.
Yeah, and just for some context for Daniel and like any listeners, Jefferson Public Radio is located on the grounds of Southern Oregon University's campus, specifically in their feeder building. Southern Oregon PBS is located in downtown Medford.
But also, bring strategies too if we're combining our station with JPR, which is a very strong news station.
So you mentioned the state of apprehension. Is that as a result of the flood the zone strategy that the administration is using against you?
I guess you can kind of call that. It's more like the shotgun blast. You know, we're just getting this news like, okay. And like I said before, PBS has been under threat before in previous. I mean, the previous Trump administration said something about that. And then you look at, you know, Mr. Rogers going in front of Congress in the 70s and, you know, establishing the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the continued funding. So I don't know if we're going to have those kind of hearings in front of Congress like we did in the 70s. But to everybody that's been in public television for a long time, this threat is real. And I think a lot of maybe, you know, old timers or people that have been in the industry for a while, especially on the public media side, kind of rested on their laurels a little bit, like there's no way they could ever take this away. But it's a fragile balance. You know, there are stations like us who depend on that money for operating costs and for just general, you know, payroll and things like that. But then there's, you know, OPB, KQED, these larger public television stations who, you know, basically do the same thing that we do, but have a much, you know, bigger budget, and JPR also has a wider footprint. They go up to Coos Bay, so there and further into Reading. So it's the radio has a bigger footprint, which means they have more listeners, more contributors, but you know it's less costly to run a radio station than it is a television station.
Has sort of any decisions or plans been put in place to help weather through this storm?
But it's like I already said, there's rumors about that, you know, we might have to close a downtown television station and move on to SOU's campus. So, and you know, that's, we've been in that location since 1979. It's an old building. So
have people been coming out, and speaking out in support of your organization?
We've gotten emails. I mean, there's nothing been publicly, kind of, I guess, or editorially. I haven't really seen anything, but our donations are up. And I think that's part of the reaction to Trump's actions, obviously. People are seeing that this is a valuable resource in the community. And it's something that, and to your point, they probably did remember the Mr. Rogers and things like that. But this also sort of spurs, if you want to know kind of a change that's happening, it's like I said at the top of the interview here, we've got to make ourselves relevant. You know, if we're just a pass-through and people can get it, you know, on their PBS app, on their TV or their smart television, you know, why would it matter if Southern Oregon PBS is around? So I like to push our programming. Hopefully this will kind of eke our programming to more hyper-local, as I like to call it. I think Cinema 42 kind of helps that out. That's something that I've been working on, and I'm getting an hour-long show to highlight the films and do interviews, and that, you know, gives it a reason for the kids' parents to watch PBS. You know, even just local filmmakers, and Dakota knows this. I mean, there is a burgeoning kind of community of filmmaking down here, because it's, we're getting people that were, can't afford California, or were, you know, displaced by the Palisades fire. And this, I'm sure Dakota can share this too. It's kind of a retirement for a lot of movie business folks, if you will. We need responses. We need answers to people's questions about this. As just not as a fan of PBS and as an employee. You know, you've got to, you know, at least have some sort of comeback when people say, well, I don't want my money going that.
Yeah, to my understanding, you guys have a campaign of $1.60 annual per person is what it costs to help keep PBS up and running. My next question would be, what is the most realistic outcome that's both the worst case and the best case scenario?
Worst case scenario would be that Southern Oregon PBS would shut down, and we would just be, they'd use our bones for parts, or we'd probably keep the transmitters and the repeaters, and they'd just probably just be maybe a hub someplace in an office building that takes all the programming from OPB and sends it right out to Southern Oregon and Northern California. Best case scenario, we get our funding. We get community support. We kind of, Southern Oregon PBS becomes a stronger brand, and we're able to produce more locally driven content. Joining with SOU, like you said, Dakota, would not be the worst, be part of a worst case scenario. That would probably be a best case scenario, but it sort of also diminishes our independence. JPR, I think, has a more, JPR for one is Jefferson Public Radio. So the state of Jefferson, I don't know if you've done any kind of research on that, but it's a fiercely independent, I'm gonna say like more of a conservative leaning sort of, I mean, they're in Redding and they're in Coos Bay and they're in our broadcast region, Klamath Falls to Brookings and whatnot. Their audience is a lot more diverse, I guess, because we have, you know, super rural. I mean, also SOPBS is super rural, Klamath County and Eastern Oregon, more dealing with farmers. But what a lot of, there's a reason why people are in Oregon. You know, it's, there's fierce environmentalists, but there's also, you know, got the wildfires, keeping our forests, you know, accessible. So you have like conservative environmentalists, and then you have super God and guns, but just want to be left alone. So it's, ours at least is kind of more an education, and then if our news comes from a national base, we don't do a lot of local news programming yet. So JPR in that sense has a more informed, they're more informational for their area. We have a couple programs that are specific to the area, but no news.
You just recently, the other day, had a meeting with your leadership about potential plans and things you guys are going to do. So can you give us sort of a recap of where we left off?
So we had a meeting with our president of the company, CEO Phil Meyer, kind of laid out what's happening in Congress right now. There's a rescission bill going through Congress. It's already been up for a vote twice. I believe it's going to be up for a vote next week. And what that does is it takes the money that's already allotted to CPB and takes it away. So we've had a budget, you know, obviously fiscal year 2025, with this money in plan to pay for, you know, operations and costs and whatnot. To that end, since Republicans aren't getting a lot of votes, and there's been already a couple million responses with the PBS's Protect My Public Media campaign. 50% of preschool children do not go to preschool. So PBS morning, you know, cartoons or whatever, it's part of the, you know, process of rearing an educated child is having access to that stuff over the air. You know, they just pulled a rural broadband internet incentive. So, you know, if people can't afford the internet, which is, you know, a lot of people, especially in rural areas where it just doesn't reach, over the air transmission is the only way they get information. And like, we are part of the Emergency Cell Phone Act network and emergency alert systems. And what is going to happen now is we're scaling back some capital projects that we were working on, some infrastructure stuff. And what's happening too is since National Science Foundation and National Endowment for the Arts, since their funding is being cut, that automatically relates. And I showed you that article about the PBS's public learning. These federal programs, or this federal money that was going to these arts and education and cultural programming, is being, you know, pulled. So you know, the stuff that was supposed to maybe finished up in September, maybe they shot it, and they're just looking for a grant to finish post production, which I think a lot of grants do. That's on hope. We have enough money in reserves to, at our current level, the way we're spending, to go another year. But we also, in order to recoup that money, we'd have to get two times the amount of subscribers that we have right now, our patrons, or, you know, the ones that give sustainers, you know, $5 a month or something like that. So out of a whole year, you know, it's, I forgot what amount it is. But anyway, we'd have to do, you know, to maintain our current levels, we'd have to do double that. Barring that, we're getting a lot more, just a positive thing. We're getting more large donors, large contributions, because obviously it's being more in the new cycle. So the people that used to give, you know, $2,000 are giving $5,000 are giving $10,000. And we're seeing that within the last couple months. It's a good thing, but, you know, it's got to be invested right. It's got to be put into a contingency fund.
Yeah, I'm right now reading like the Deadline article you sent me, and it goes into like one of the things that I'm like right in the middle of reading in this article is the Department of Education and their decision to end the Ready to Learn It grant, which was authorized in 1992 amendment to the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, and that would make sure like corporate public broadcasting and PBS would receive grants at each 5-year cycle, with this latest cycle expiring on September 30th, and that's like coming straight up to an end. And because like the Department of Education like has been completely weaponized,
they don't really set education policy. They're the one that dole out the grants. So therefore, if there's no organization to give out the grants, the grants aren't going to be given out. And it goes back to that Ready to Learn program that got cut. Is, I think I have a statistic here. Right here. PBS Kids averages 16 million monthly users and over 350 million monthly streams across digital platforms. But it's a lot of kids, you know, either the parents are going to sit them in front of a tablet, you know, play games or, you know, any distraction. PBS actually has, at least it's, if it's going to be a distraction, it should be at least educational for you, you know, not a TikTok stream or something like that. So
yeah, it's like, because it's like one of those things of PBS, like the first thing that comes to my mind in terms of their shows and broadcasting they have, it's always their education stuff for young children. I think like that's the shame. That's like what seemingly is the main target of getting cut is all those kids focused education shows. Like I even remember like hearing stories like from back in the '80s of where there was like issues where parents would have with cartoons like G.I. Joe and Transformers of how much they're being pushed to sell toys and not doing enough education. And now we're hearing about shows that were pushed to educate children that are now being at risk of losing funding.
There is, yeah, it's weird. This, the comments that I hear, you know, the comments I've read underneath that, because our president did an interview last Thursday for Kobe, is, you know, why do we have to pay for it? What good is that? And why I don't want my tax dollars going to, you know, lefty leaning stuff. And it's just left, empathy leans left. You know, it's not, you know, if anything, we get criticized for being too conservative.
And not, it's not just that. There's also just like this weird lack of just understanding or empathy of how tax dollars work and they not, and just all the things they will go to like, I think like it's kind of absolutely weird for some people to have the sense of why is my tax dollars going to PBS when there's like a bunch of other more questionable things that I probably shouldn't be going to, like all the forever wars in the Middle East.
Oh yeah, well our defense spending is up again. So, and it's kind of funny. I think as this all kind of like weeds out, it's like we're not finding any government waste. I mean, what's being saved? I haven't heard any numbers on where this money is going that we're clawing back, I guess.
Are you guys like, how's it like looking in regards to potential layoffs for like a lot of this stuff? I'm curious.
Well, if we, like I said, we could turn into a pass-through station, which would eliminate, you know, half of my job and other two others. We kind of have to look at doing things like more efficiently, I guess. Maybe cut some, because we do have some part-time people that have been working here for a while. And Phil wants, I think my boss is going to retire pretty soon. The production manager is going to retire pretty soon, like maybe next year. So there's kind of a transitionatory type action already kind of happening. And maybe they just won't hire somebody else to replace them. Kind of, we've got to make us value added. So if we do need to get twice the subscribers, well, then let's kind of look into making more productions, maybe doing more live events. And I would like to do, I mean, I'm going to suggest to do a Patreon model. Say we get behind the scenes of Energy Horizons. We've got, you know, tons of B-roll and stuff like that and bloopers and outtakes, and maybe even have a do a podcast or have a discussion after the Us As We Are sort of, you know, programs that Keegan's doing or all across Oregon, our local productions, have more media or more content link. We've got to kind of look at, you know, a station is more of just, you know, we're just beaming out content. More, we've got to engage our viewers because it really is. I mean, it's viewers like you.
So there are no local pledge drives is what I'm hearing. Those are all for national.
I think we used to do live. We have a couple programs like the Great Train Journeys or something like that. He comes in and I would like to do more live stuff, but it's safer obviously to do pre-recorded. And it's usually centered around some sort of program that were, I think last pledge was around a nature program and we had little interstitials and KS Wild like had tickets, you know, we do work with local companies, but it's, you know, I kind of would like to get back to the telethon, you know, sort of thing, 24 hours, just being goofy. And, you know, there's plenty of artists and actors here. I'm sure we could do like Shakespeare scenes or have a band or I think that's part of our, what I would like to bring a local initiative in. So, yeah, to that.
Yeah, I was wondering, you're talking about what programs were being affected as far as post-production. I was wondering, are those going to be affecting any of your most popular programming, and what are those programs?
There's three programs that are affected right now. They just start. We have three new programs. I think it's Lila and Loop, Work It Out Wombats, and maybe Carl the Collector. These are programs that just debuted this year, and you know they've been budgeted for the first season. But and these are really popular programs. I mean, I probably get some Nielsen data on it, but they're in limbo. They can't, you know, like I said, there's a lot of post-production grants that are being stopped. You know, things are made, but they got to be, you know, edited or, you know, sweetened and of some sort post-production. So those are the three in that article, I believe, that are being affected. But there's got to be more, obviously. They're pulling back grants for.
And what about your local programming? What are among the most popular, and are those going to continue?
Nothing's been affected yet. If anything, like I said, it kind of spurred some actions into some people as far as to up their giving. But, you know, our local productions that we need are Us As We Are, all across Oregon. And then we also air interstitials, the work of art, Southern Oregon Responds, and what's the other one? Oh, then my program, Cinema 42, but I mean, I cost nothing, obviously. So there might be, you know, pullback in production funding for that. And I think the what may result into this is the less grant money that usually was available is probably going towards, you know, instead of giving to TV, you probably want to give to, you know, a drug treatment program because their funding got cut. You know, they need the money more than we do. You can probably put that in your own head. But the result, I think giving is changing, and the way grants, what happens with grants usually is they'll tell you about what grant you, like if you're interested in this grant, you write your proposal, and then it's another 3 or 4 weeks before they say yes or no. And you don't even know if you're gonna get that full amount. You know, you probably could apply for $8,000, but they're only gonna give you $5,000. So since this government money is drying up, a lot of these nonprofits and social services are going to have to go to the private sector, which kind of, with those foundations and grants from, at least for the government, it was delivered on time. There's a date that it had to be done and that you're going to get it. With these foundations, they could take all the time they want, you know, the mull over, whatever they want. It's like, we're giving you money, we can take all the time we want. So that could have a real impact on public broadcasting, especially for us. If grants are going towards more needed social services instead of, you know, yes, PBS is essential and that, but we're not saving lives. I guess maybe you are with PSAs, but, you know, it could lessen the amount of money that's available for everybody.
All right. And I guess my last question before we wrap it up here is there like a vision you sort of see at, like, or at least some sort of light at the end of the tunnel?
Well, that's kind of what I've been kind of stating before, is that this crisis, if you will, of fundraising and not knowing where our budget is going to come from in the next 2 years has actually spurned more the community to, you know, support or be more aware of public media, and to, you know, that public media campaign has gotten millions of I don't know what portion of from us. I'm sure I'll get those numbers soon, but it's kind of bringing awareness, at least, to what we do and what we can do and how we serve our community, you know. Because, you know, what's complacency breeds contempt in that way where, yeah, it's always going to be there. Don't worry about it. You know, you don't really pay attention to it until it's gone. And I think the light at the end of the tunnel is like, hey, and it kind of boosts our ego too. It helps because, you know, sometimes it's thankless. I mean, I'm supposed to be invisible. So if something, the only way I get attention or not attention, or the only reason eyes would be on me is because something wrong happened on television, like a black spot or a wrong air. Other than that, I'm invisible, and that's what I'm supposed to be. So, but to get some, you know, some reaction from the community, I think it's been great. As far as the reaction from our audience.
All right. I think we're running out of time. Thank you so much for coming by.